Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And we're back. It's the Luke and Pete Show. Luke and Pete Summer with me, Pete Donaldson. I'm joined by Luke Moore.
All right.
On the podcast.
Yeah, this music makes us sound like 10 times cooler and better than we are.
I know, right?
It's like a massive oral illusion.
Thank you to Doc Brown for coming up with that bit, a bit of music.
Yeah,
grab
I got
his
this.
Album.
I got this.
I got this.
Off the album Stemmer.
Mm. I'd like to start the show, Luke, by introducing our new show sponsor, Gasoline Chews.
Okay.
Solid camping fuel and a tasty jelly lozenge, good for what ails you.
Okay.
Mm.
Did we get some for free for that?
No, I ate them all.
I bet you did. I wonder what the smell was when I walked in.
It was petrol.
Do not turn the light switch off. That's what I'll say.
Or on. How are you, Luke? You all right?
Doing well, thanks. Yeah,
doing
pretty
well,
good. Still reeling after last week's revelations.
Mm.
A few bits and pieces I'm still coming to grips with.
Yuri Gagarin's face.
As I'm sure the listeners are.
The drummer of Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Soundwaves being responsible for ghosts. Who'd have thought that?
Isn't there a soundwave you can do, like, it was featured on South Park, where you play a note deep enough you soil yourself? The forbidden brown note.
I don't think South Park is a reliable account, but it's possible. It is possible.
Well, what I would say is...
That's the excuse I'll be using next Saturday night.
There's a part of this show, later on in this show, we're going to be featuring the TV show Bob's Burgers.
Okay.
Or rather, it came from Bob's Burgers, and that's how I first became aware of one of the bits.
I'm not familiar with the show, so...
Yes. Great show.
It's a cartoon, isn't it?
Yeah. I'll usually go for Family Guy first.
No, I'm not into that.
I don't know why everyone's got a problem with Family Guy.
I haven't got a bit of rewriting
history on this one, I think.
I'm not a part of...
They got us through some really dark Simpsons times.
Pete, I'm not a part of an overriding anti-Family Guy conspiracy. I had no idea it wasn't very popular. I assumed it was popular because it's always on telly. It's just not something that's ever grabbed me. I do like The Simpsons, though. I
bet you're an American Dad kind of guy.
I've never seen it.
Disgusting.
I do like South Park, though. How about that?
How about that, then? It's been 1 week since last we spoke. Shall we do that again? It's been... A bit louder, a bit meatier.
What, because you didn't have the volume up on the desk?
Well, I didn't have the volume up on the desk because I'd faded it down to allow us to talk over the music at the start, so that's why.
I mean, that's Radio Presenter 101.
That is radio... Well, if I had a proper playout system that allowed me to use different faders, I would have been all right, but clearly not.
Can I venture that you are dressed like a Frenchman today?
Yes, I am. I've got the Breton stripes and garlic up my bum.
Does that have to bring racism into it?
How is that racist?
Just saying, you dress like a Frenchman.
Well, what, because I've got a stripy top on?
You're
bringing racism into it.
You look like you've just come from watching a lovely new wave movie.
A new wave movie?
A bit of Jean-Luc Besson.
I've been listening to a bit of Yeah Yeah music. Luke,
yeah.
Shall I get into what I've been looking at all this week?
Yes.
In 1 week.
Okay.
Listener Tom. Thank you, Listener Tom. Basically, there's going to be a lot more listener interaction on this one, because to be quite frank, we've had a lot of emails, and I feel kind of responsible if we don't get through at least some of them.
What I'll add to that is, I mean, for those who don't know, the most boring part of a radio show, making one, is the prep.
Yes.
And if you can get a listeners involved, if you can share the load around, because let's be honest, none of us are getting paid for this.
Yeah.
Let's share the load around.
What?
A hive mind of thousands of people is going to have better ideas than just you and me.
Yeah, exactly.
You and me, two people who've got no history of any good ideas anyway.
No.
So it makes sense. So thanks to Tom. I don't know what the contribution is yet, but thanks to Tom anyway in advance.
It could be terrible.
Hopefully it's good.
Well, basically, you know, you were talking about a few weeks ago now about you gave the rather large, capacious shout that you reckoned that if you are the pilot of, I don't know, a 747 on the way to New York City or something, you could do a complete barrel roll without anyone noticing that you've done it.
Well, I've heard. I've got a friend who...
I've got a friend. My girlfriend goes to another school.
I've got a friend who knows someone who went on a plane once. And basically, I've been told reliably,
Right.
that a good pilot can do a barrel roll. A barrel roll, maintaining 1G the whole way. Mm. So essentially, you would never know. So if it was night time, so there was no horizon to distract you,
right.
in theory... you would never know.
I mean, what constitutes a good pilot when you're doing something that rarely is necessary?
Well, you can either do it or you can't. If you can, you're a good pilot. If you can't, you're not.
Okay. Is that your only thing? Is that your only... if you were running airlinesafetyratings.com...
That's all they do in the test.
Can you do a loop-de-loop? Yes.
Right, are we doing...
You're a good pilot.
Are we doing landing or takeoff? Nah.
Yeah.
We'll get up in the air, do a barrel roll, and you're golden.
You're the bloke in the Chelsea... Chesley Sullenberger trial.
Yeah,
that goes. Did you do a barrel roll? Not a good pilot.
No, he didn't.
Slap him.
Doesn't Denzel Washington do it? He sort of turns the plane upside down up and flies. I think we talked about this when we mentioned it the first instance. What are you bringing? What's Tom bringing to the table?
Well, Tom basically says, further to your barrel rolling chat, I thought you might enjoy this video. Basically, of a pilot in the US Air Force demonstrating the rolling abilities of a transport jet to some military/government top brass while they're on board. So he's trying to impress.
Well, there you go, then.
What?
It can be done then. Let's see the video. Where is it? Get it up.
Here it is. Click play.
Oh, it's only 45 seconds. That's a nice treat. Last one you showed me was 12 minutes. I'm not watching that, is what I said at the time. 45 seconds.
That's ejaculate.
Are you ready for me to hit play?
Yeah.
Can I use the space bar?
Yeah.
I'm going to use the mouse.
It's Gene Sukert in co-pilot seat.
I mean, this is old.
This is old. This is like 1970s footage.
Airplane filled with generals.
Okay, so he's got the glass. He's put it on a little pedestal in the cockpit.
Can the airplane be
right over the instruments. Yes. That's risky, isn't it?
It's half full of water, depending on your outlook.
I think it's iced tea.
Okay.
A cup of coffee and none of them.
Oh, he's just done it. He's doing it. They're upside down. The water, the iced tea's still in there.
I got so bold as to think that maybe I could even pour iced tea.
And now he's pouring it while he's doing it.
He shouldn't be doing that. That's reckless.
Keep your eyes on the road.
Backhanded to see it on camera.
Believe
it or not,
there he goes.
Horizon going around.
His nose is really diving into the horizon, though. I'm not liking that.
I have never been more convinced that can be done. I'm just going to hit close that before it plays something else.
Okay.
I think also, if you think of picture yourself in the cabin.
Yeah.
Where you're separate from the cockpit, so you've got no perspective on what the...
What the captain's doing.
My theory on a lot of people who are fearful of flying is, it's a control thing. You can't see. You know, the same way, of course, some people are just naturally scared of heights and the velocity and all that stuff. I get that. But you know, I don't know if you won't know this, but I'm sure you've been told this before. When you're driving, you never get car sick.
Yeah.
Because you're always concentrating on what you're doing. Yeah. So it never doesn't
and
come
also
into
you're
you.
Looking at the horizon most of the time
and,
as well.
And you're in control. Mm. So you can predict and you can sort of legislate for sort of bumps in the road and stop and start and all that stuff because it's you doing it.
Mm.
But so I think with people who are flying, it's because they're not in control. They have no idea what's happening. They've got no semblance of grasping what's going to happen next, the turbulence, all that sort of stuff. So if you factor that in, people sat in the cabin in their seatbelts in, and it's night time, for example, 100% someone could do that, and no one would know. They wouldn't know.
They probably do, and we don't know.
There we go. I reckon we've at least experienced it 10 times each.
If there's any commercial pilots listening, can you prove that you don't do that?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Prove it.
Don't do it on our account.
No.
But in theory, because if you're going to give us your working out on a piece of paper, that'll satisfy me. Good. So that's. I mean, why did he send that into you and not into me?
I don't really know. I mean, somebody else, Caleb says, as a licensed pilot who has done a barrel roll before.
Showing off. Anyone could say that.
I find it extremely doubtful that it could be pulled off without the passengers noticing.
What's his name?
That's Caleb.
I've just seen it, Caleb.
No, we noticed that. We were in the cockpit, though.
But what I'm saying is that what the liquid is proving is that if there was no windows and you were just sat there, it would be exactly the same as normal. You just wouldn't know. And I guess maybe because your hair would be in the same place and everything.
He says, even if the G's don't actually get very high, planes that are upside down have no lift, so they fall like rocks until righted, something that would probably be noted.
No, but it's like
you'd notice the plane going down.
That's not
and,
true
well,
either.
You do put notice planes going down and up, though, don't you?
It can't be, because it's like a corkscrew. Think of it like a corkscrew. It's going along. It's not just upside down and falling.
Also, as a licensed pilot who's done a barrel roll before...
Well, he's emailed in, isn't he? Is there a photo attachment of his pilot's license?
Well, I don't know. He says, granted, I'm not an airline pilot, but I don't think it would change that much on a big jet.
I could have told you that. I'm not an airline pilot, but I don't think it would change much. Yeah. That doesn't sound like a scientific analysis for me.
All right, big man, what have you got this week? What have you been experiencing?
I've done a barrel roll in a plane. Do you want to see a video?
Rolled around in a barrel. Yeah. I've scraped a barrel this week.
That is more accurate. I want to talk to you about a chap called Christopher Knight.
Right.
I read about this.
I used to know Christopher Knight at school. He played the tuba.
Tell me what you remember about him first.
He played the tuba. He once put a picture on Facebook of him. He was a rather chubby chap. Peeking over his bed, looking at his cat.
That famous and photo was, you shared with me. I remember
did
that.
I?
Yeah, you shared it with me. Yeah.
Well, we've named him now. So I wasn't bullying you, Chris. I just thought it was a funny photo.
He's not listening. He's probably got a proper job. He's not got time for this nonsense. Anyway.
I imagine he's playing his tuba, listening to this, and he'll probably go, all sad and that.
Like Harold Bishop from Neighbours.
And looking at the cat and going, don't listen to him, Harry.
Was Harold Bishop tuba or euphonium? I think it was tuba, wasn't it?
It was tuba, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw a man in New Orleans playing a, is it a sousaphone? Sousaphone?
Which is the one that wraps around you?
Yeah, that one. The big bad one.
So what's a euphonium then, in between those two?
Euphonium's a tuba. It's a larger tuba, I think.
So it's in between tuba and sousaphone.
Yeah, because I used to play the cornet, which is a small trumpet, back at school. And I changed schools, and due to austerity or something, probably Tory government, all that, they could only provide me a tuba. And to a little boy like me, was hilarious looking.
I mean, you're struggling to even pick that up.
I know.
Yeah, with your asthma as well.
If I'd kept it going, I might not have had such terrible asthma.
Instruments I've attempted over the years.
Right.
Guitar.
Yeah.
Drums. Flute.
Flute?
Yeah.
Oh, you look like a 70s folk star.
I wasn't born till 1980.
But you would look like it, though.
You're talking Jethro Tull?
I'm talking Vin Garbutt.
Codpiece.
Who died recently. Codpiece. Yeah.
Jethro Tull was the famous one, wasn't he?
Did he have a codpiece?
Actually, I think the band was called Jethro Tull. I think he was called Jethro Tull. Oh. He had a codpiece as well.
Did he? Like the man from, Cameo.
Yes,
that's
actually.
The word.
Yeah, word up.
What was that about? The big red codpiece?
Don't know. It's the
80s. I've got the leather trousers.
Yeah.
They're jazzy enough. I'm not wearing a top.
Yeah.
And I've got but I'm still going to go for the red codpiece.
The 80s were a difficult time for us all. But anyway, did you all play. The flute story is a boring one, but did you all play recorder at school? Ever play recorder?
I never played the recorder, but everyone did.
And they picked a few of us who were all right at recorder to try the flute. And I think looking back on it now, it's probably a scam to get my parents to part with like hundreds of pounds because they're really expensive. And that never happened.
Do you remember the bigger recorders that were like larger?
Yeah.
I don't
know why people got involved with those.
Mega recorder. Yeah. It was like when Swizzle lollies came bigger. Those drumstick lollies.
Well,
you get a gigantic one.
Because confectionery normally goes the other way, larger to smaller, doesn't it? Yeah, if you pick up a Snickers now, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Massive Palmer Violets. Remember them?
Yes.
The big packets?
They're too floral for me, Palmer Violets. Shall I get back to Christopher Knight? Who took a photo of himself inappropriately with a cat.
Yeah.
According to you, Pete
Well, appropriately
Larson.
For him.
Well, this is a different Christopher Knight.
Yeah.
Who, in 1986, aged 20... drove into the wilderness in Maine. And we talked about Maine last week a little bit. We mentioned New England. It's similar.
We never show up about it.
No. He drove his car into along more and more remote trails until he ran out of petrol, at which point he abandoned his car and just simply walked into the wilderness. He didn't return for 27 years.
Wow.
He had no compass, no map. He just had a tent and a backpack, and he maintains to this day he doesn't know why he did it. Now, there's a book about this called The Stranger in the Woods, The Extraordinary Story of the World's Last True Hermit by Michael Finkel. I just ordered it off Amazon, not read it yet. But what I know so far is that it becomes a bit more of an interesting story rather than just the sort of hermit side of it. Because, you know, when people talk about hermits, and there's been other examples of this type of story where people go out and they make a statement. There was a great Channel 4 documentary, called, I think it was called Alone in the Woods, about a nature cameraman, a documentary filmmaker, who basically just went out into Canada with a handheld video camera, and that's it.
Right.
And he dropped he just had a whole load of memory cards, and he dropped them off at an agreed point every 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
That's all he had.
Yeah.
And then what he was planning on doing was just diarising his attempt to survive. He was planning on catching salmon when the salmon season came in. He was catching little mammals and stuff. And what transpired was that it was just a disaster. He lasted about 5 weeks. He lost loads of weight. He mentally just completely disintegrated.
Yeah.
He was crying at like every 10 minutes.
Filming it all.
And it was a compelling watch. But anyway, my point about that is that when people do this stuff, they sort of go out and they paint or they film or whatever. This guy didn't do any of that stuff. But what he did do, and where the story gets interesting, is he started stealing from local cabins on the side of this lake. So he found a little spot on one side of a lake, completely secluded. No one was walking through there or anything. It was really, really rural. On the other side of the lake were all these holiday cabins. He then started, because obviously he was hungry, he started burglarizing, as they say in the US, burgling these cabins. He turned it into what has been estimated as the most prolific burglar ever. He successfully committed over 1,000 burglaries and was never caught. And it got to the point of where he was so good, people knew there was a burglar around, didn't know anything about him. He was so good, they were leaving pens and papers out for him for shopping lists, just saying, look, just tell us what you want and we'll just get it for you.
Oh, what? Instead of, what, don't burgle our house, you know.
And they were leaving, like, stuff out for him so he wouldn't go into their cupboards and stuff like that.
But there's no honour among a mad burglar. A mad forest burglar.
He every time he found a spare key in a cabin, he took it. That's sinister, isn't it?
So he could return.
So he would successfully chivvy his way into a cabin, and he would see a spare key, so he'd take it. And after over a number of period of time, he built up a spare key collection for every place.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
Two questions though. One. Who was he selling his shit to?
No, it was just to eat
food.
He was a hermit who was living on the other side of the lake. What he was doing?
He wasn't fencing the stuff to animals.
No, I don't think so. I think there was a racket going on.
Right.
I think he was just literally stealing what he needed to eat, and that
selling
was it.
A Game Boy to a squirrel.
Yeah, no, it wasn't any of that stuff. I don't think he stole any electronic devices. But anyway, 27 years later, he was finally caught after around 1,000 burglaries.
Right.
He was caught stealing from a holiday camp on the lake.
I wonder what he went where he got greedy and just got a big watermelon or something.
Yeah.
That was his last one big score. Massive watermelon.
Go back across the lake, you sank. he was caught only a few years ago, and there's a book. He was absolutely inundated with requests from journalists because people had sort of known about this. It's one of these sort of apocryphal stories about this guy living in the woods, but it turned out to be true. And he gave journalism access to this guy, Michael Finkel, who ended up writing this book. It's a fascinating story. As the book title says, the world's last true hermit. I mean, he went in 1986. He didn't live a city. I think he spent one night in a cabin and he felt so guilty about it, he didn't do it again. He spent every single night. And it gets cold up in Maine, by the way. I mean, it's no joke. It's snow, proper snow. And he spent every other night in 27 years out in the elements and survived.
Incredible.
Yeah, amazing story. So that's what I learned about this week, and I thought other people might be interested in that as well. Admittedly, it's no barrel roll on a plane with iced tea, but you know, you can't have it all.
He probably stores.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Nice tea.
Okay, Luke, don't gunge me, mate.
Pipe down, Pete. I told you never to argue with the customers.
Emails,
Good to hear you haven't been like arguing with the customers this time around, Peter.
What do you mean? Sorry.
We talked about it last week. We talked about you. Did you not hear your own jingle, which you produced and played then?
Life passes me by sometimes. I can go days without sort of. That's another thing about the cabins. They're all made of wood, so you'd hear the creaking about.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying, guys.
The guy, you don't know.
He must have had some close scripts. Don't read the book and let us know what happened.
Well, I think some of the cabins were unoccupied at the weekend or whatever, or during the week, probably. Mm. Yeah, but anyway. We've done that now, anyway.
Yeah, it's a bit of a drag back. Bit of a drag back.
Let's not do, I mean, I talked about this last, let's not do too much poo, because it gets me down.
Okay.
It gets me down.
Adam! Well, you know what? Adam, I will do shall I just round up all the poo emails we've had in, basically? A big, let's use the word dump, of emails.
A content dump.
A content dump.
What I would like is if you just condense them down to a series of bullets. Please just do that.
Yeah. Just like rabbits.
Because I've got a brilliant poo email that has nothing to do with poo, and I want you to hear it. So you go first.
So, Adam had a situation in a school where he found himself in a tech cubby hall, joined by a child's poop.
Did he work there?
Yeah, he went, yeah.
I was going to say, come on.
He was, I think he was working in the AV department, or some kind of tech job anyway, okay. But he, I don't have the details, because I condensed these down.
Yeah, fair
distilled
enough.
Them.
No, I requested that, so that's fair enough.
Curtis Robinson, poo on the floor in toilets, socks ceremonially placed on top. Would you quite like?
Is it like a flag?
Like a little flag?
Flag, this is a flag. Yeah.
Ryan, in the toilet bin, somebody did a poo.
That's disappointing.
Well, at least it was in a bin.
But it's in the bin, in the toilet?
Yeah.
It's not that you've been caught short, you're already in the toilet.
Apparently it happens a lot when people get stressed out. A couple of people noted on the emails. Dean Hindle, middle of the floor in the toilet. Management Cobra meeting was called. Management came to the agreement that it was probably a fox, ignoring the fact that we do have... In fact, ignoring the fact that we do have revolving doors, security guards, three flights of stairs, and so on. Dean does go on to say, I probably won't report it again, to be honest.
No point. There's no point. It's worth. Oh, Pete, did we talk on this show about the fox on the escalator at the tube station?
Yeah, I think we might have done. Yeah,
you did.
It's just weird to see that.
I see foxes everywhere in my road now.
It's rather incongruous, isn't it, seeing a fox in a.
I live probably about 20 houses down the road as you enter the road. Mm. And in that stretch, I've seen four different foxes before in one night.
Oh, yeah. Incredible. They're so prevalent.
Well, they're an incredibly successful species. I think it's because they can eat almost literally anything. They're so adaptable. They can eat anything. That's why they thrive in both rural and urban areas, I think.
Like the guy in the cabin, in many
ways. Exactly, yeah. I mean, God knows where he passed his matter.
I think I mentioned there is a couple of more emails, but I won't go into them. But I think I mentioned at the time that most large businesses have instances of like workplace stress and people just flipping out and just rubbing shit all over the place. That happens basically. It's something like over businesses that have over 50 employees. They smear shit on the walls, basically.
Wow.
Every now and again.
Well,
listen, it's an illness, but it happens, sadly.
The thing that annoys me about this, Pete, is I started off last week's show asking for stories about fights. Just more poo emails.
Maybe they thought you said farts.
Yeah, maybe. There was a guy, it's hard to remember how much stuff we've talked about and haven't talked about on this subject. I worked at a place once where someone broke back into the office late doors and accidentally had an accident on the stairwell. I'll tell you.
Oh, yes, I think you did. I think you did that one. But there's a quite nice story. Not a nice story. But in the Rolls-Royce factory in Patchway, Bristol.
Now you're talking.
I had a Google for dirty protests at work. As far as workplace pranks go, I'm reading, mother. Smearing shit all over the place isn't the most endearing thing you can do. In fact, it'll probably get you on the fast track to getting sectioned. But a series of dirty protests at the Rolls-Royce factory in Patchway, Bristol, is having an unexpected effect. It's bringing workers together. The 75 million pound facility employs 3,500 people and specialises in aircraft jet engines. And whilst that's worrying, isn't it? While the culprit has struck at least 8 times production, the factory will have to continue while a scatological revolt is investigated. However, rather than causing outcry at the factory, it's inspired something akin to the Blitz spirit at the plant, with workers noticing a greater sense of community than usual. It's really odd, and it's the one thing in the factory that everyone is talking about, an anonymous worker told the Bristol Post. Yeah. What I like about that is, in engines, there are plenty of places to hide a poop.
It sounds
plenty of ducts, plenty of holes. Pete, it's going to be like Axel Foley in Beverly Hills Cop, where he puts the banana in the tailpipe.
Sounds to me like the shit has hit the jet engine. Then.
Yeah, hit the turbine.
Yeah.
What a terrible.
I know.
What a terrible situation.
What a disgusting species we are.
I really had
an email about a guy complaining, well, not complaining, but observing how you say the word disgusting.
How do I say it?
I just say it.
Disgusting.
Yeah, I don't think you normally say it like that.
Sometimes I go, disgusting.
No, you don't.
Whenever somebody points something out like that to you, you sort of go, I don't know, it's disgusting. 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 I'm just a man saying disgusting.
You don't say them anywhere near like that.
Disgusting.
It doesn't make any sense. Just say disgusting.
Disgusting. Right. We've got one from Daniel Cunningham. Do you want a quick one? It's kind of a cross between a Mincarta entry and an email, but I'm putting it in the email section because
we've got some
listener interaction for the Mincarta thing this week.
Go for it.
Damien Cunningham says, in another similar vein of bizarre/tragic sideshow attractions, like Magic Mike the Headless Chicken, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
In 1902, a female African elephant named Topsy, that was part of a travelling circus, was executed publicly by hanging to celebrate the opening of a theme park in Coney Island.
That is absolutely outrageous. What year was that?
1902.
My God.
Which is grist to the mill of my theory that elephants are the most fucking miserable creatures in the universe and endure endless suffering at every turn.
Well, I'd agree with that.
Sorry to give you such a sombre note, but do keep up the fine work. Yours earnestly, Damien.
I've got another email from a guy called Damien.
Well, do you want the sort of background on Topsy the Elephant?
Yeah, okay.
Fascinating.
Yeah,
I did a little bit of research.
Please tell me there's some sort of, like, decent amount of, like, you know, uplifting element to this.
Well, a
grisly end, no doubt, but surely she had some sort of life worthy of the name before that.
No, she was a bit of a shit. She killed someone.
So, I mean, fine, but that's, you can't hang an elephant.
No. Well, I don't know how they would bloody do it, but
crane.
Basically...
That's yeah, a crane,
well,
wouldn't it?
To be honest, it does get mentioned in Bob's Burgers, a TV show I quite enjoy that I mentioned a little earlier on.
Yeah.
But I did know about that before that, so anyone who thinks I'm obsessed with television and TV cartoons, it's not true, because I already knew about this. And I only knew it through the prism of Nikola Tesla.
Well, I know you well, and I know you are a professor. I mean, you're not winning any friends by saying that.
So... Tops the elephant. She killed someone, and she wouldn't do what she was told, so she was sold on. And then, thanks to having a bit of a pissed up handler, she was just a bit of a nightmare. But she was a real shit of an elephant. But you know, elephants don't belong in cities, which is what you would usually sort of say.
That's an interesting point, because of course, you know, we're brought up to believe that elephants should be respected, and they're a really important species. I'm sure they are, but I reckon you get your fair share of shits in
there. You know, like, there's bad apples. Yeah. There's bad apples in every species.
Don't let them infect the whole bunch.
Yeah, but the murder of this elephant, it was filmed by the Edison Company.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Thomas Edison used to be involved with those guys. Basically, the story goes, which isn't actually true, but the legend goes with Topsy, is that... Thomas Edison wanted to use the footage of this elephant dying, getting electrocuted as well, because basically it was hung and also electrocuted and also poisoned in the same instance. This is how hard it is to kill an elephant, it turns out. So basically, the Edison Company wanted to use the footage to show that DC current was safer than alternating current, because there was this big Tesla AC... versus DC Edison Company battle for a long time.
Like Marvel and DC.
competing technologies. And so the Edison Company wanted to basically prove that that DC current was safer than AC by running DC current... AC current through an elephant.
Find me the biggest animal you can find.
I know! Get a moose! Get a moose! Yeah. But actually, technically, it was just to use in their seaside What the Butler Saw machines. So they filmed it just so they could get it in those machines, basically.
That's outrageous, isn't
it? I mean, who wants to look into a hall and see a dying elephant? So basically, this is what happened. Harrowing. Just harrowing. Topsy was fed carrots laced with 460 grams of potassium cyanide by the agent Charles Murray, who then backed away. At 2:45 p.m. of the day in 1902, Sharkey gave a signal, and an electrician on a telephone told the superintendent at Coney Island Station, 9 blocks away, to close the switch, and the Luna Park chief electrician, Hugh Thomas, closed another one at the park, sending 660 volts from Bay Ridge across Topsy's body for 10 seconds, toppling her to the ground. According to at least one contemporary account, she died without a trumpet or a groan. Were they expecting to go...
They're still having a go at her.
I know! Yeah. After Topsy fell, the steam-powered winch tightened two nooses placed around her neck for 10 minutes. At 2:47, 2 minutes later, Topsy was pronounced dead.
But they gave her a kick again anyway.
And then they shot her with a blunderbuss.
Goodness me.
That's horrible, isn't it?
Some of this
stuff
is...
So if you do need to kill an elephant, that's how to do it, and know that it's, you know, gonna work. Dreadful.
I've got another email from Damien, and I suspect it might be the same guy.
Okay.
Which is an admirable amount of commitment to this show. Some would say the commitment we've not shown ourselves. But, let's just move on from that, because Damien, if it is the same guy, he has excelled himself with a much more cheerful anecdote, one that will be right up your street, Donaldson.
What's the elephant body count, Luke?
Yeah, there's no elephants mentioned in it, luckily. He says, hello, Luke and Pete. I have a summer-themed story in a similar vein to Pete's. I'm not going to phrase it in the way he's phrased it.
Right.
But I think episode 2, going way back now, you talked about finding, in quotes, a balloon under your father's and mother's bed.
Yeah. It was a real fan favourite story for many.
Yeah, it was. I mean, rightly so. I mean, you tried to blow it up. People can fill in between the lines there and know exactly what I mean.
In between the lips, Luke.
So Damien said he's got a similar story. He says, once when I was aged just 5... I attempted to superglue my teeth and lips shut in order to try and become a better ventriloquist and be more like Garfield.
Hang on. Garfield didn't open his mouth, did he?
He's a cartoon, though, isn't he?
Yeah,
That's the key. I can imagine you doing something like this.
How did he get... it gets really hot, superglue, doesn't it? I mean, you would actually melt your lips.
Well, the fact about superglue that everyone knows, but just in case there are some people that still don't know this...
Right.
I'm not patronising you, I'm just saying, I'm pretty sure I'm not saying anything new here, but the reason it sticks your skin together so well is because it was developed during the war as a replacement for stitches.
Oh, yes, so people still use it as...
A battlefield-type treatment. Anyway... I remember my mother freaking out, which is in hindsight understandable because despite all preconceived notions, she does actually care about me, rushing me to the doctor, a normal one, not a witch doctor, and I remember being quite irked because I missed Fraggle Rock that evening as a result. It doesn't say what happened. I mean... There we go.
I mean, if only there was a warning at the end of that TV
away.
Show.
Worries for another day. That's it, isn't it?
Don't glue your lips together, you idiot. Down at Fraggle Rock.
You won't look like Garfield anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know what the treatment will be for that. It doesn't mention it, sadly. I'd like to know what the doctor... Because, I mean, there must be... If you're a doctor, I think there's a certain element of doctors, GPs, definitely, where they go... Yeah, okay, bear me a second, and they're Googling away.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Every case is different.
But on their, in their defence, I mean, to be fair to them, if someone walks in, if some idiot, and I'm sorry, Damien, I know you're only five, but some idiot walks in and they super glued their mouth shut, right? Mm. I mean, a doctor cannot be expected to learn about that in medical school. They can't cover everything.
They must, super glue is a very popular solvent, though, isn't it? If you're not... gluing yourself together, you're sniffing it, so...
Coming up, Pete Donaldson's top three solvents. Number one, superglue. Number two, Araldite. Number three, the one you used to husk beyond the BP garage when you were a kid.
Exactly.
So the doctor can't be expected not to do that. Damien, if you would be so kind, I know you've had a couple of emails to us already, but if you could let us know exactly how you were treated, if you can remember, I'd very much be interested in hearing that.
My favourite glues are the ones that you've got to mix. You've got two kinds of chemicals, you've got to mix them together.
That's your purest glue there.
With a match.
So they're the ones that's the glue that you get to do ethics models with and stuff, right? Do you remember Swarfiga as well?
I do remember Swarfiga, yeah.
Did we talk about that on the show already?
No, I think we've touched on it. My mate Gavin got some free Swarfiga, or he won a competition to get a personalised tub of Swarfiga, and I was so jealous.
I'm sure we've talked about this already.
That he gave me a ball with my name on it, saying, always follow your dreams.
Sorry about that. I told you because I got some in my eyes, didn't I?
Did you?
Yeah. Oh. It's horrible. It's really
bad. Long time ago.
I used to love using Swarfiga because you used to put it on before you put the water on your hand. There's quite a bit of novelty involved. That's what the 80s were like.
Yeah.
Let there be justice for all. Let there be peace for all.
It's one small step for man.
You don't understand. Willie was a salesman.
If someone could tell me what the hell that's from.
Yeah, very simply, with hope, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to you too.
Good morning to you, random man.
Has this show got a late night feel? Because we do record it quite late in the evening.
We do, yeah. I mean, it sounds like it's quarter to 11 now.
Yeah. I like the late night feel. It feels a bit like...
Put your shoes back on.
Sorry, yeah. It feels a bit like a... Yeah, like a sort of, you know, late night chat show. With no callers.
night caller.
Yeah.
Remember that TV show that used to feature a late night talk DJ that used to talk to women, usually, and solve crimes in the night? You a real kind of inaccurate idea about what overnight DJ-ery was and is.
Well, you would know.
Well, exactly.
I was going to say Up with the Partridge, but what do you, when you're on your evening shows, your nighttime shows, what does it do? Give people a little glimpse behind the curtain. What do you do? You're on your own for 4 or 5 hours. What do you do?
Go on YouTube and find things for this show, or just my own satisfaction.
Careful.
There was a guy who used to, can I say the radio station? There was a radio station that used to play jazz 24/7.
Okay. That'd be hard to track down.
Even if you're on even nodding terms with the UK radio industry, you'll know exactly which station it was. But so they have these guys called Tech Ops, where they basically play out pre-recorded programs. So just to keep the radio station on air.
But are they present at the time?
So they just play out basically links and music and things like that. They just keep the radio station running on overnight and stuff like that. They get paid a minimal fee.
Do they speak at all?
They don't speak at all. No. And so they one time on overnight, Jazz FM was on, and you could clearly hear all of our computers are linked to the mixing desk, so you can basically play out stuff on air, like, you know, how we played the YouTube thing earlier
of
the man pouring iced tea in zero gravity or whatever.
It wasn't zero gravity.
G's were involved, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, remember that?
You still working at NASA?
Yeah, I got iced tea in the instruments, so they won't let
me. The rapper?
So this man was basically clearly listening or watching something a little bit illicit, because over the top of this rather jazzy and, let's face it, fitting soundtrack, you can hear gay pornography, men pumping away.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, is he still working in the industry?
So this chatty...
Anyway, and here he is. Like,
please
welcome our new guest. who was it?
I don't know who it was, to be honest, but I don't think he worked there. There was a guy who was, when he used to work for XFM, there's a guy who used to do tech hopping, who was very keen on the website fuckingmachines.com.
Oh my goodness.
Which is men who've made power drills with dildos on them.
Yeah, we don't need to know about
fuckingmachines.com.
We don't need to know about that, do we?
Yeah. No, we don't.
As probably 70 to 80% of the questions I ask you, I wish I didn't ask you it. What we got for Men Carter?
Sophie!
Okay.
A girl.
Okay.
Sorry about all things I've said earlier on this episode.
Well, you should be apologising to everyone.
I know, but it just seems more egregious when it's girls.
Yeah.
Hello, boys. I like amusing history almost as much as I like other stuff, and Luke's talk of military blunders reminded me of a possibly apocryphal tale about the Liechtenstein army.
This is episode one stuff.
I know.
Yeah,
military blunders. What a delicious blunder.
We can all agree there really were some truly delicious blunders in that book.
The story goes that during the Austro-Prussian War in 1866, 80 men went off to fight, but 81 came back.
Wow.
With a foreign officer, either Italian or Austrian, depending on which version of the story you read, joining up with them on the way home. Perhaps the opposite of a blunder, to actually have increased your fighting force after a war. Although ultimately pointless, as the Liechtenstein army was disbanded a couple of years later. They still have no military to this day. They probably went, you know what? We've done better than we ever imagined with our 80 soldiers.
We'll take the money and go. We've had a lovely day, Chris Tarrant.
Yeah.
We're off. Well, but the thing is, the flip side to that is, if you're actually gaining people, carry on.
Yeah.
Carry on with it.
Keep on collecting it.
Like
lint on a Hoover.
Yeah,
keep hoovering up people.
Do you mean a dry? What's it called? A tumble dryer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did Sophie say the entire Liechtenstein army was 80 members?
No, that would be mad, wouldn't it?
But there's not many people.
Even back in 1866, 80 men went off to fight, so presumably some of the battalions went.
Yeah, okay,
that's
right.
I don't care how small your country is, that's not enough people.
No.
The Jersey army probably has more. Even Evan Kearney sent this one.
I think he's the guy who emailed in and said his name's pronounced Carney or something. He got annoyed about it.
Yeah, but he also said that some people call him Effen.
Effen,
but I didn't do that.
No, you
didn't.
Evan Kearney.
Evan Kearney.
Little sort of tip for you. If you email in and you talk about at great length a couple of sentences about how to pronounce your name, we're almost like legally obliged to pronounce it wrong on purpose.
Yeah, I think so.
So just take what you get.
Well, this is another bizarre military engagement. The Pig War of 1859. Mm-hmm. I'm reading off not off his email. He goes into very little detail, but I managed to find an internet page about it. But the Pig War in 1859 is perhaps one of the most obscure and unusual wars in history. It started in 1846 when the Oregon Treaty was signed between the US and the British. The treaty aimed to put to rest a long-standing border issue, but it was actually quite hard to draw up the line between the border and the set of islands situated in the southwest of Vancouver. Around this region, the treaty stated that the border had to be through the middle of a channel, but because the islands were rather strangely positioned, it was always going to be difficult, basically. So, in 1859, the British had a significant presence on the island, bolstered with the recent arrival of the Hudson Bay Company, who set up a salmon curing station. Love cured salmon.
Yeah.
Delicious.
And
also a sheep ranch on the island. Meanwhile, a contingent of between 20 to 30 US settlers had also recently arrived on the same island and made it their home.
And someone arrived and burnt £1 million on it.
Yeah, £50 are being found everywhere.
Yeah.
Judging by reports of the time, both sets of islanders actually got on rather well. However, this is not to last, as on June the 15th, 1859, a pig belonging to the British accidentally wandered onto the land of Lyman Cutler, a American farmer. When Cutler noticed the pig eating some of his potatoes, he was incensed and he shot and killed the pig.
That's not an appropriate response.
Well...
I don't know.
Well, the conversation went. It was owned by a British employee of the Hudson Bay Company called Charles Griffin. This is the conversation that transpired between Griffin and Cutler. Griffin went to confront Cutler about shooting his pig. Cutler said, "But it was eating my potatoes." Griffin said, "Rubbish. It's up to you to keep your potatoes out of my pig."
What? That, I'm not having that. I'm not on board
Isn't
there.
That beautifully put? Cutler did, however, offer to pay Griffin a sum of $10 in compensation for the dead pig, but this was refused. Instead, Griffin reported Cutler to the local British authorities, who threatened to arrest him, much to the anger of the local American citizens, who subsequently drew up a petition requesting US military protection. That protection was granted, and a big war kicked off, sort of, until the... it was kind of a bit of a pitch battle, but Admiral Robert L. Baines, Commander-in-Chief of the British Navy in the Pacific, basically went, "I am not involving two great nations in a war over a squabble about a pig." So...
Sounded like it. Oh, yeah, back in those days, they were all up about the war.
I know. So, yeah, he didn't want to get involved with a pig war, effectively, which I quite like. Do you want one final one for the Mankata to be inducted into Mankata?
Yeah, sure.
This is from Tig. Hello, Tig. What's the crack, lads?
All right.
Guess where Tig's from?
Ireland. Is he from Ireland?
He's from Ireland.
Yeah.
After hearing the chat last week about the Great Boston Molasses Flood, that was actually the first episode, I thought I'd add in a lesser known fact about another American city, Seattle. While living in Seattle during the summer of 2014, we decided to do an underground tour of the old part of the city. Originally, we thought the tour would just have us walking around the city's old abandoned sewer pipes or moving through the basements of surrounding buildings. But what the tour actually turned out to be was far more interesting. When the old part of the city was being built on the marshy land that surrounded the area, it, like most cities, was built on the coast around the main port. However, unbeknownst to the locals, the concept of tides did not seem to enter into the great minds of the city planners. In addition to this, it soon became apparent that marsh isn't the most ideal of foundations to build a city on, as it soon started sinking. Why do people still keep doing that, you know?
Yeah.
This perfect storm of sinking land and disastrous planning meant that when the city's sewer lines were installed, all the sewage would be pumped out into the Pacific and brought down the coast to the neighbouring city of Tacoma during low tide. But during high tides, all of Seattle's waste, along with the waste from Tacoma, along with all seawater, would come rushing back in, resulting in a not molasses flood, but a poo flood.
Yeah.
We were told that
such
was the force of the sewage re-entering the pipeline that it would cause toilets to rocket up into the air.
Wow! What did they do about it, Pete?
Exciting. Basically, they raised the entire city by two stories. They built massive 20 to 30 foot walls around blocks of buildings and gradually filled the area in with whatever they could find. What you're probably thinking now is, how did they get around with giant walls surrounding the buildings? Well, giant ladders, of course.
Yeah, I mean, is this true?
That's what he said. I didn't have time to check this one out, to be honest.
Has this slipped through the net?
Well, apparently the combination of drunk men and giant ladders is not a good mix, and there's a grim old wives' tale that many a drunkard may have ended up entombed in the city's foundations after suffering a heavy fall.
I mean, the reason I'm getting confused is because he took the tour in 2014. This didn't happen in 2014.
No,
yeah,
no.
That's fair enough.
A bit more...
a bit confused.
There's a few skyscrapers in Seattle. Probably not getting involved in that kind of care. But what I would say is that... didn't Edinburgh had an underground city?
Yeah.
Part around the train station.
I think you still do a tour of it now, I believe.
Yeah, I find anything abandoned fascinating. Tube stations, train stations,
There's a number of tube stations abandoned in London, of course. Yeah. And they have
Aldwych and all those ones.
You can hire them out, I think. It's one of the Strand as well.
You can nowadays. Isn't that not Aldwych, the Strand?
I think...
There's the British Library. Oh, there's bloody loads of them, to be honest. My favourite one is if you stand on the northbound Northern Line station at London Bridge, you can look up into a small... when it was all competing companies in sort of the early 1900s, there was a small tunnel that used to serve about three or four stations, and you can see it to this very day.
Really?
In London Bridge.
In about 1860-ish, the first London tube station, underground station, was created, which is Baker Street.
Yeah.
I mean, why didn't they do another one?
What do you mean?
Well, because where's it going to go?
Oh,
where's the train going to go?
I don't know.
I don't think the second one was built until a couple of years later. So it's like, yeah, we're definitely going to get to that. Surely you've got to open to it at the same time.
Yeah, well, they were all competing sort of technologies and different gauges of the rails and stuff like that.
Oh, were they?
There was a great story in, I think, Alexandra Palace. They basically had a problem to get through a hill, so they just dug a tunnel. And they had the world's first vacuum-powered train.
Huh.
So basically they made a seal, like an oily seal, through the whole tunnel, and they would just use a generator to generate not steam, but I guess air, compressed air, that would propel the train through this this tunnel. That was like, you know, same sort of time, 1900s, I think.
And did it work?
It didn't work because the rats ate all the grease.
Oh, really?
So it destroyed the tunnels, effectively.
Have you been on the bullet train?
What, the
Japanese one?
Shinkansen, yeah.
Have you?
A few times, yeah.
What's it like?
It's very quick. I've been on a faster train, the maglev, that floats in Shanghai.
Right,
that gets
okay.
up like 200 miles an hour, maybe faster. I can't remember, 250 miles per hour. I might be going mad there, but
does it feel like you're going faster?
Yeah, it absolutely whips along, but it's very smooth, obviously, because it's. But the thing is, it's such a space age, it's not space age, but it's such an advanced technology. But it only runs from the airport to just inside the city limits. Like, it's
so
not
how long
great.
You want it for?
Say again.
How long you want it for? Then?
About 20 minutes, half an hour, I think.
Well, it must be quite far away then.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm just saying that why don't you just get it right into the centre of the city? That's
right,
what I'm saying.
Okay, right. And yeah. and because on a plane, obviously, you don't really feel like you're moving along. So is it similar to that sort of experience?
It is whip quick. And to be honest, the Shinkansen and the bullet train is very quick as well. But yeah,
I'm only used to getting southern, aren't I?
But what is it? If the actual ceremony of the train actually pulling into the station is actually something to behold, because they've got such long noses.
Yeah,
just, I mean, presumably due to the aerodynamics and stuff. Yeah. But they've got such a long kind of. They look like the blobfish. Yeah. You know, the blobfish with the big old schnozzer.
So is that train the fastest train in the world then?
The maglev.
So I was about to say.
I think it is. Yeah, I think the maglev is.
If people listen, have been on a faster train than that.
maybe there is one. I don't know.
You're lying.
Yeah.
Because you know we talked about paradoxes last.
There's probably one in bloody Qatar or something.
You know we talked about paradoxes last week. We mentioned paradoxes briefly. I forget why. It was to do with the brain, the human brain. Mm. Well, I was thinking of a paradox at the time. I completely forgot to say it. And it was based on this. Bear with me on this. If you're sending a spacecraft to a far off galaxy, say a couple of light years away or whatever, no longer than that, like light years away.
It's not a dare that. Don't do that, Luke.
No, well, quite. You know all about this. That's why I'm asking you, right? And say it took, say, in real time, it took 30 years to get there. Mm. Okay, then is it not fair to assume then that while that spacecraft's doing that thing, within that interim 30 years on Earth, there could have been technology built even better, which means that you would send one later that would get there quicker. So there's no point sending that one in the first place. So would it then impede technology because you're thinking, well, we spent all that money sending that earlier one. There's no point sending this one. It's going to get there first because it's going to render that other one obsolete. Mm. So is there any point doing it?
Well, they do take a long time to build, and like once you're right though, once they get up, they're massively obsolete.
What I'm saying is the distances are so far, and the time is so long that it's actually very very difficult philosophically to actually justify it because you're going better stuff's going to come along.
Yeah,
interesting one. But just putting
would
it out
you put
there,
it in a, would you put your money in your pot though? Like, oh, we've given you all this money, we're just waiting.
Yeah,
just waiting until
the time is right now.
Yeah,
it's now. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Difficult
it's hard to know.
To know
when to sort of say stop, but maybe it's a kind of very futuristic, theoretical conundrum.
You've travelled faster than me on Earth in the maglev. I've never gone anywhere near that fast.
Yeah. I wonder if either of us have gone on a faster plane than each other.
Hard to know.
Yeah.
Did you go on Concorde in the 80s?
Oh, I'm so annoyed I missed that.
That's the most 80s thing
apart
ever,
from that
Concorde.
One that crashed in Paris.
The most 80s thing to ever happen was Phil Collins getting the Concorde from London
to do Live Aid,
to perform in New York, and do two on the same day in Live Aid. Yeah, that's the most. Nothing more 80s ever happened than that.
No.
Phil Collins, Live Aid, Concorde, in one story.
I remember. Do you remember when the last Concorde flew? I remember going on the roof of my London office.
Oh, did you see it?
When I used to work for the London government, I stood on the top of the... We all ran to the top. And I wouldn't care. I was like with three Australians who just didn't really give a toss, to be honest.
Could you actually see it properly?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
No,
I remember it coming
to
land.
Not a non-chilled spine around, though. used to work for the London Council. God.
It was for housing.
Are we out of time?
We're out of time. Let's get out of here, Luke.
Yeah, okay, let's do
God
it.
Damn
we
it.
Said that every week. Let's get out of here.
Let's get out of here. Yeah.
There it is. Found it in the end, mate.
If you want to get in touch, as always, just get in touch via the email system we have here on the internet. It's
a regularly monitored email system.
It's hello at lukeandpeteshow.com. We'll see you next week for more Luke and Pete Show. I'm running out of theme. Bye, Luke.
See ya.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack.
for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.